Bring the attention inward. To the center of consciousness. Separate the consciousness from its contents, including the world, the body, thoughts, images, emotions. Separate, withdraw until only pure consciousness remains in the space of presence. Pure consciousness without identity, without an other, without a story, return all the way to the uncreated level of consciousness. Unconditioned. Unmoving. Unmanifest. Abide in the stillness of pure presence that is absence of an I thought and feel what is real. Enter the expanse of emptiness that is filled with luminous awareness. Completely free of all mental agitation. completely free of all movements of the mind. The self is the stillness. The absolute presence beyond time, space, matter, energy. And beyond life and death, appearance and disappearance, beyond creation and destruction, in the zero dimension that is the absolute. And in the infinitesimal center point of pure awareness, realize the emanation of the infinite expanse of the field in which every phenomenon arises. As another permutation of the self. And this field of infinite energy appears also as your body, and the body is filled with the power of divine presence. Recognize that consciousness is all-containing, all-encompassing, all-pervading, all-projecting, and yet all is only the zero point. In the form of the emanation of infinite information carried by light. establish your consciousness in the innermost abode of silence, untouched by appearance or change. Or sensation. And bring the awareness into a completely integrated state. In which the phenomenal, imaginary, and the symbolic, archetypal wisdom, and the supreme real are one. And now let the infinite mind of the Supreme Intelligence enter fully into the finite. Let the ocean enter into the drop. And let the ocean and its waves become the Tao that determines every response in life. Shivaya, Shivaya, Namah, Om Shiva Aham. Om Tat Sat. Namaste. So I'll start with an apology for taking away your movie night and your popcorn and your kombucha. Sorry, Hanuman. But the reason is that we are in an urgent situation. And I have no other way to impress upon you the urgency than by interrupting the normal course of events and taking away a little piece of jouissance and hopefully replacing it with some empowerment. Rather than wasting time and discharging energy into identification with imaginary characters, which is even worse than identifying with the ego, which is an imaginary character, it is imperative to attain the real now. And the reason is that time is short. It is no accident that every religion has emphasized the fact that time will come to an end during an age in which everything gradually and then more quickly goes wrong. And that wrongness, that out of syncness, that growing darkness that eclipses the light of spirit and of goodness and of purity, that turns everything evil and turns everything stupid and turns everything lacking in empowerment, happens at the end and it becomes a climax. This is what the Christians call the galloping of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. They are already on the move, as I'm sure you recognize. The tsunamis of unhappiness, of misfortune, of evil, of destructive, cataclysmic force are accelerating daily. And when that force reaches your neighborhood, will you have the ability to withstand the overwhelming horrors of the events that will unfold? Will you have the strength, the wisdom, the connection to God, the capacity to transcend and disidentify from the realm of appearance to make it through without losing continuity of consciousness? Even at the moment of the death of the body. If you wish to have that power to cope with what is happening as the floods rise and the situations on this earth plane worsen and ever more freedoms are taken away and ever more options for improving your situation disappear, and you, if you are still in the ego, will fall into total hopelessness and despair, if not worse states than that. Are you ready to deal with what we must all have to face? because it is the preparation for that that is the function of this ashram, this community, these teachings, these processes, and the opportunity to meditate together. But the truth is, there are only at most 4 or 5 serious yogis living in this ashram. And there are very few serious yogis in the world. Most people are here to have as good a time as possible on the phenomenal plane and to enjoy singing and dancing and art and even philosophy and phenomenal plane activities. Or concerned with survival in the off-grid scenario we will have to face. But very few are determined to transcend the matrix and attain liberation. And I'm sure you're all aware of that, that you are still governed, ruled entirely by the ego mind. Identified with it, identified with the body, identified with the ego's narrative and its enjoyments, its hopes and its ambitions, and its denial of the truth of the situation of that we are in. But denial is destined to fail at some point. But if we have failed to gain realization of the Supreme Self before that overwhelming energy strikes us, there will be remorse and regret of a rather enormous sort. And a failure to graduate from the game, which will require another round, another cycle, another opportunity to learn from suffering, if you prefer it that way. Everyone gets what they want. But for those who want release now from the delusion of the ego mind, we are here to offer that. Not many will take up that offer. But it requires letting go of all the petty concerns of the ego, including the health of the body, including its longevity, including the body's functioning to be in a full capacity for sensory information input. All of that is secondary. What is important is the realization that you are unborn and bodiless. If that is not achieved, and if you do not realize that your story is a fiction, and that that fiction's fictional goals are not only unachievable, but would be a disappointment in any case, you would realize that the more rajasic you are, the more your mind is going toward objects of desire and resonating in fear of other objects and attacking inner voices of the ego, and all of the vicissitudes of suffering that the ego structure causes. It's only the freedom from that, the return to self-sovereignty, that will bring salvation of a real kind. And you will have to decide if you are interested in transcending this imaginary dimension into the real or not. But my purpose is to give you the information you need to do it if you want to do it. But wanting to do it means willingness to let go of all of the ego's thoughts until you know what real inner silence is. And in that silence, the absolute presence is revealed. So I'm going to give you another map, slightly more refined and internally focused than the last one. So I'll call this module the seven sequelae of Vajra grace. Why Vajra grace? Does everyone know the symbolic meaning of the Vajra? It's used as a symbol by both the Vedic sages and the Buddhists. And it can mean either the diamond mind of the completely God-realized consciousness, or it can refer to a lightning bolt sent out by God to awaken the consciousness to its real nature. And every religion also has stories about its historical members, its saints, sages, martyrs, and enlightened followers who have received the lightning bolt. For example, in Christianity, it's famous that Paul of Tarsus, on the road to Damascus, allegedly, who was a persecutor of those Jews who became followers of Yeshua in the wisdom school that later became Christianity in its own deteriorated history, that he received a lightning bolt and fell from his horse, but he was transformed by it. And he changed his name to Paul from Saul. And he became the leading exponent of Christian thought. Because in that lightning bolt moment, his mind opened to the infinite and he realized the true meaning of Christ is risen. The true meaning of the transcendence of our crucified state as egos and our capacity for ascension to the right hand of God. But how do you attract such a lightning bolt? Do you have a lightning rod? Are you able to attract that lightning to such an extent that it transforms your mind into the diamond mind? Because that's its purpose. So, so this bolt of divine lightning, when it hits you, it reveals that your ego is unreal. It reveals that the world is only a quantum field. It reveals the unreality of time and space and matter and energy of its gross levels. And the realization comes that Shiva is I, or Buddha is I, or Allah is I. Whatever tradition uses, whatever final term, it always is equivalent that I am that, not what I thought I was, which is a body and a holographic illusion. And there is an awakening to the real self. That's grace. You can't force the lightning bolt to hit you, but if you surrender to the source that can give you the gift of that voltage, you will be hit by it if your invocation of it is consistent and determined, and you are willing to go through ego death. But only if you are willing to go through ego death, because that is what it will bring about. Once you are hit by grace that illumines your mind and breaks you free of the illusion, you receive the force of that lightning, its power, right? Now, if we go back to the Star Wars films and the famous phrase, "May the Force be with you," the real question, of course, is, are you with the Force? Because if you're with the ego, you're not with the Force. You may want the Force to be with you, but that won't happen so long as you are separated from the Force by being in the ignorance of what you are. But as you come out of that ignorance, whether through grace or through the effort that brings grace, you will receive the force. Now, why is this important, to receive the force? Why is it important that the force be with you? Because the battle is not over. The battle is just beginning once you've received grace. The grace gives you the power to defeat the darkness, but you have to still defeat it. So the hero's journey begins really at this point. So what happens is, the ego morphs into discipline itself. One becomes a being of discipline. Not an ego that has discipline, but discipline itself. And what is discipline except the Dharma, the law of God? And you become an enforcer of that law within your own body. You are able to discipline your body to let go of activities and of attitudes that keep you earthbound. You're able to let go of everything that has encrusted the consciousness and caused weakness, ignorance, and a disconnect from the intelligence of the self. So you literally become an impersonal person in this phase. And this is what is upsetting to the ego. It doesn't want to lose its personality. It doesn't want to become disciplined. That's hard work to the ego. It wants to play around. It doesn't want to become serious. But all of that has to fall away for the seriousness of the self to bring about the purification of one's heart, mind, and life. Without that purification, you cannot contain and transmit the power. And you cannot rise to the transcendent level of consciousness. Force annihilates Maya as it continues relentlessly until all mental agitation has been completely released. All the sanskaras, the vasanas, the mental activity that produces desire and fear disappear. And one enters the stillness of the Absolute. But then, there is still another piece of work to do. And so the buddhi, the intellect, that is now awakened to its real nature focuses on the archetypal realm. And this focus brings about an understanding of every component of reality, because reality derives from the archetypal nous or nous, the higher mind, the supreme mind that Plato called the demiurgos. But it is that intelligence that makes the rules of creation at the highest level, the laws of nature and the laws of the supernatural, of the unfoldment of the sutratma, of the content and systematicity of the mahasutratma, all of that is contained. Now, the Hindus used a triadic map to represent those rules. And they were the Trimurti, as they called them, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shambho. It was originally Shambho, Rudra, Shankara, not Shiva, because Shiva is the father of the Trimurti. But then Shiva became identified with the destructive aspect. But all of the aspects of the unfoldment of reality, creation, sustenance, destruction, or transformation, to put it in a more positive way, are contained in the archetypal realm of mind that enables you to understand everything. Okay? All questions, doubts, inaccuracies are eliminated. And that, and there's the female version of that are the three goddesses, Saraswati, Lakshmi, but Lakshmi slash Radha, because there are two levels of sustenance, one that is at the subtle and one that is at the phenomenal, and then Kali. All right? Kali signifies death, the great death of the world. And Kali is in copulatory union with Shiva, with Mahakal, that creates the death of death, which is the return of the singularity. The phenomenal plane is exploded into light, and there is only light. That is death. But that death is also eternal life. So the unfoldment of the force leads to the annihilation of Maya and then to the understanding to be able to create a new world and sustain it, and then at the right moment, when necessary, destroy it. That information must come to us to be able to function accurately here and now. One of the Zen masters in the middle period of Zen, still Chan Buddhism in China, was asked, what is Chan or what is Zen? And his response was very interesting. He said, Zen is accurate response. Okay? That means in every moment, you are responding to the situation in accord with the highest Tao, the Tao that cannot be named, that is beyond thought and language and the human level of intelligence. But you will be able to respond accurately in every moment, every nanosecond, because you will have become the embodiment of the Tao. And there will therefore be no time lag of figuring out what to say or do or where to go, which will make it always too late. But there will be an instantaneous functioning that keeps one on the wave of time because the timeless has to pervade time to direct the trajectory of time to its optimal conclusion. So, in the fifth sequel of the grace, the phenomenal dream is brought to an end. That doesn't mean that at the macrocosmic level there aren't still apparently suffering beings going on in the dream, but for you as an individual consciousness, the dream comes to an end. This is the union of Shiva and Shakti. This is that moment in which the aspect of God consciousness that creates the world unites with that aspect that destroys it, that withdraws consciousness from its phenomenal emanation and manifestation. And the light completely fills the space of the world. There is no world. There is a realization there never was. It was all only an implicate order, an idea in the mind of God that is now brought back home to its source. And all experience as a register of consciousness is brought to an end. Even imperience is brought to an end. And there is the stillness of the Absolute without any interruption or any oscillation. And this leads to the establishment of consciousness in and as the Absolute. So there is no trace of any ego to go back to. And the Absolute is all that ever was. Everything is revealed as having never even been, because the dream only appears to one who is dreaming, but the Self, the Absolute, is beyond the dream. Has never left that ultimate state that is beyond even nothingness. It cannot be considered either being or nothingness, either presence or absence, but it is beyond all information, all fields, all worlds, and it is the final destination of the Self on this journey. And then finally, the Swaha. Which is the sacrifice even of the Absolute. Which is inconceivable, and yet that's why we're here. And so the sacrifice is a new world. But the new world is only made for sacrifice. So that's the agenda, the itinerary, and it is entirely directed by God, who is the only one who can bring that lightning bolt that starts the process. But without your love for that God self, a love that overcomes the resistances of the ego, without that, the process will never begin. And the lost soul will have to go through further incarnations. But once the reality has hit that there are no incarnations, there is no other than the Absolute, then the field of Maya becomes Leela, a field of infinite joy, even at the moment of destruction, even in the darkest days of Kali Yuga. There is only bliss. So that's the message I have for you, whether you feel it positive or not. You will have to decide what to do with that and what the implications are for your own life and the way to accurately live it. So, floor is open if anyone has any questions or comments. Ah, Nirgun.
Thank you, Shinya, for that teaching. It was very very sobering indeed, and definitely broke the routine in the mind. I wanted to ask about the the reception of the Force, and you said that that's the grace. The Force gives you the power to begin the work of defeating the demons or going into the darkness, and but one has to start that work without the grace, without the Force. Is that a way of showing Shiva that one is serious about the process?
Yes, you start with surrender, and you give yourself to that power that is supreme, and then you will be hit by the lightning bolt. That's the love that God will show you. And if you can retain the energy of that lightning bolt and not disperse it, not run away from it, not try to bring yourself down again and out of fear of disappearing into the ether, if you can overcome that resistance, you will retain the Force. You will become a manifestation of the Force, and that Force will eat away all of the inaccurate thoughts in the mind and all of the deceptive desires and sensations and attitudes until there is stillness and the ego itself is annihilated. But what remains and what will be perceived by others is that you've just become an engine of discipline. They won't perceive the bliss behind it, but they will perceive the discipline, that you're able to keep yourself totally in accurate alignment without any oscillation, without any falling into Maya of any kind. So one who is in this stage isn't going to gossip. They're not going to oversleep. They're not going to feel weak morally or in some other way to let go of lower chakra enjoyments. They're going to be able to fast when necessary. They're going to be able to eat accurately. They're going to be able to speak accurately. They're going to be able to live with accurate responses to every situation so that no more bad karma is created. And there will no longer even be an ego to attract karma. So that's what the force accomplishes. Okay? Yes.
So the force enables somebody to become the Dharma, just to embody that.
That's right.
Okay.
Because the force contains the intelligence of God and that accurate understanding of what is real and what is unreal then gives you the power to let go of the unreal completely and abide as the real.
Living the Dharma before you've received that force is sort of like the fake it till you make it?
No, you're not living according to the Dharma. You're living according to rules that will get you closer to an understanding of the Dharma and will help remove some of the grosser levels of karma to be able to know what the real is. But it's not about faking it. It's about earnest yearning to achieve the perfection of the self in this realm. And the more that one makes effort in that direction, the more that one receives the force to accomplish it.
Thank you.
Okay. Bajra.
Thank you. It's a very powerful teaching, lightning bolt. I wanted to ask about the relationship between number 3 and number 4. Is it that when the ego is out of the way, there's no maya, then the Buddhi is able to completely focus its attention on the understanding?
Mm-hmm. That's right. You can now download the information that gives you all of the rules of how reality is structured and changed. And using that information, then you are able to become the master over the phenomenal plane and the trajectory of unfoldment of your sutratma, we could say, or your last prarabdha karma that creates still an illusion of a dream even though you've awakened from it. And that last bit is able to be, let's say, transformed as a result of that information.
Because you see things as they really are.
Yes.
Thank you. I had another question about the swaha. You said the sacrifice of even of the absolute is why we're here. And I was wondering what you meant by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have sacrificed the absolute to be here, haven't we? Durga?
Thank you. In the point 4, you talked about the triad again. I know we have studied a lot, but I never realized that creation, sustenance, and you use transformation, but it's also destruction. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to like, in general, creation, sustenance, but there's a negative connotation toward destruction, and it's always difficult. And when that is the archetype, then you happen to embody, is difficult. Why?
It's difficult for the ego. It's not difficult for the real self. The real self is death, and so it doesn't fear death. And that's why you have to become Kali in the real sense, not the Kali personality strategy, which doesn't usually murder its object, but it might make the object want to die. But that's a different level than Kali, who is the literal death of the world. Okay? And then beyond that is the death of death. And when you realize that you are death and therefore you're not subject to death, then nothing is difficult. And there's no more care. There's no more even possible concept of difficulty. You've already gone beyond all that illusion.
Yeah, I mean, I find it the beginning almost. I like it, but in general, it feels archetypally humanity doesn't like that part. Like you can, everything is good when you're talking about creation, okay. Sustenance, and then it comes that part, and there's like a negative reaction.
Look, when the creation happens, there are no egos. The egos are not part of creation. When there is sustenance, there are still no egos. There are souls, but not yet egos. It's only in the time of destruction that egos emerge, because egos are the cause of destruction. And destruction is the reciprocal of the ego, because the ego in itself is the destruction of the real. It has destroyed its contact with the absolute. It has become a false being. And it has no reality. It is already destroyed because it is only a phantasm. There is no reality to the ego. And therefore, the ego brings about its own destruction because the ego doesn't want to suffer anymore. So there are two ways out of the ego. One is the lower death drive, which can come in the form of karma that you don't like, but that is being called by the ego to get out of its suffering, or the upper death drive, in which you realize again the absolute. But either way, death is coming. But there's a lower death. That's why there's the Lord of Death, Yama, and then there's the higher death. And it's that death of death, Mahakal, that a yogi wants to go through for eternal life, not being back on the cycle of birth and death.
That helps a lot to understand how in creation it was a spirit, then soul, and egos are just in Kali Yuga. But I don't know if I'm correlating this properly. The only way that Shiva could stop Kali was by pretending to be a corpse. This is a story I read somewhere. And that was the only way Kali stopped destroying the world, because she realized she was stepping on Shiva or something like that.
No, it's actually the opposite, that it is that union that does destroy the world, but it destroys it by bringing it into the singularity of absolute beyondness of creation or destruction. It's infinite potentiality that is no longer in an actualized state, either of deterioration and death or yet of creation. So it is that that brings you to the absolute. So Kali has to unite with the absolute so that all the souls who are being killed, or the bodies that are being killed with lost souls in them, are all raised into the absolute at the end and are then able to be let's say, put into suspended animation if there are still sanskaras that separate them from the absolute. And those will reappear at the moment when quantum wave functions collapse in such a way that ego identities reform in the next Kali Yuga. But we have to see all of this as happening at once, since time is an illusion. And all creation, sustenance, destruction is entirely present as a work of art in the mind of God.
Thank you.
I wonder what the energy of the group at these particular moments we are now in can do to help raising the yogi amount?
It depends. The more members of the group are receiving the lightning bolt and channeling the power, then indeed we can help raise each other. But if there are people in the group who are in negative states, then it will lose its coherence and its power. So it's an oscillating frequency at this point. So we're trying to raise it, but the ego resists that. It doesn't want too much ethereal energy because it dissolves its attachments and its enjoyments and all of its known life into the unknown that it's terrified by. Only when you get past the terror through ego death, then whoever would come into such a group of sages who are reborn as light will be risen into that level of light.
Thank you.
If whether someone is liberated or not, don't they still at the end of time return back to that source?
Yes, that's right. But they don't return consciously. It's like going into deep sleep. In deep sleep, you do touch into the self, but you're not aware of it. And so you wake up and you're back in the ego again, in the same way that if you are taken up in suspended animation, but there are still sanskaras that haven't been resolved, then you'll have to come down in another Kali Yuga and try to resolve them again.
If this all ends, then when do they get that chance? Does it just restart?
Yeah, well, again, it restarts, of course, because it's an infinite loop that is always present at that level of the consciousness. But once you are liberated from it, the loop may continue, but you won't be in it anymore. You won't be identified, mm-hmm. Right? You'll be beyond it. So if you want to be liberated from having to go through the pain and suffering of believing you're a bodily being, that's the way to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
On Thursday night, you spoke about the muscle, the subtle muscles, and I wonder, I can kind of perceive for myself how to develop or to work on the muscle of discipline. But I wonder, how is surrender a muscle, and how does one build it?
Well, remember last time I talked about the nigredo as being the fuel. So at that first stage, this is before the lightning bolt, you have to have a kind of disgust for the ego and its sloppiness, laziness, weakness, diversion, distraction, incoherence, all of those traits that cause you pain. And as those are burned away, the energy that had been trapped in those false constructs, let's say, about what life should be about, free you to have the realization of the absolute, and your heart opens and you will feel love, and that will be the surrender, and that will bring the lightning bolt that will ignite the rockets and you'll take off. Okay? Mm-hmm. How about you?
Thank you for the beautiful satsang. I have two questions, two comments. One would be about this lightning bolt. I can have a reference like in my life as moments where the identity suddenly got spanked or hit mm-hmm. Because of a happening mm-hmm. or that the identity of the ego mm-hmm. was suddenly, okay, there's mm-hmm. no identity anymore, mm-hmm. and you can feel the force mm-hmm. of something beyond
yes.
coming, no?
Yes.
So, when this is not happening, or is it always something that must happen in the path of mm-hmm. of a spiritual path for mm-hmm. everyone?
Yes, but it'll happen in different ways. In the Zen tradition, they call it Kensho or Satori, right? And every tradition has its own words for it. And the Zen masters eventually tried to create it artificially yeah. by slapping their disciple in the face or punching him in the gut suddenly or screaming, you know. That doesn't work anymore, so I don't use that technique. But truth itself can be shocking enough to get you out of your ego momentarily. But then you have to be opened enough that you don't want to go back to the ego. Okay. Otherwise, you'll have those experiences, but they won't be anything but conversation pieces, right? If you really want it, that lightning bolt, and realize that you are the light from which the bolt came, then you'll stay in that surrendered state, and the current of Shakti will flow from the source into your individual consciousness until it expands and reunites in resonance with the whole.
Right, it's like a constant river of energy, uh-huh. right, that we tap mm-hmm. or we get mm-hmm. expanded.
Yes.
And the other question was about that, the maintenance of this embodiment of the mm-hmm. energy in the mind, no? Mm-hmm. Because the wandering mind was my question mainly, mm-hmm. that is this one point focus something that we have to maintain the whole day? Like, for example, mm-hmm. The mind starts to identify, no? In mm-hmm. some stream of thought, mm-hmm. then this coming, okay, not identifying, no?
The third level is where the force annihilates Maya, which means the tendency to have diverting thoughts will have disappeared, okay? And then the staying in that state will be effortless because there'll be no ego trying to do it anymore. The ego that tries is gone. And then you simply are that silence. But when thoughts are required, thoughts will happen, but there will be no identification. It's just something going on in the matrix, and it has less and less interest for you.
Or it has a purpose of doing something,
of
or
course,
whatever.
It's the Tao that moves through you, yeah. but it is not in duality. Mm-hmm. So there's no sense of, I have a purpose to do this. It's the Tao itself that's unfolding in non-duality.
Like we are the space and the mm-hmm. the thoughts are happening in the space.
Okay, yes, okay. You could say that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amrita.
Thank you for this teaching. Very powerful, very powerfully felt.
Good.
For the surrender, what is the grace that comes through to surrender?
What is the... What?
Like how to surrender? What gives one the force... Uh-huh. to be able to surrender.
Mm. When one considers one's life, one generally finds that one is disappointed in oneself, if you're in the ego level. There will be a sense of failure, a sense of imperfection, unworthiness, and of... enmeshment in dependency upon other people and things and situations that make one feel not only unfree, but inadequate, weak, and having betrayed one's real nature, right? When that comes into full consciousness, then all of the negredo is something that you suddenly want to be rid of, right? So how do you get rid of it? You must surrender to that power that alone can free you from it, because you can't do it on your own. And once you realize that you've been trying to get out of Maya for a long time and you can't do it, you can't even surrender, you have to be able to then surrender that identification that can't surrender through love, because that's what love really is. And to love that power that could release you and bring you freedom and peace and transcendence will open your heart, and then that love will bring the lightning bolt of God's love into your heart, and suddenly you will know what freedom is and what joy really is. And you'll then want liberation more than anything else, and the ego will burn in that fire. Okay? Por favor, Lakshmi.
Thank you. I'm trying to understand the swaha of the sacrifice of the Absolute. So I just wanted to confirm. The sacrifice of the Absolute is when you have established yourself in the Absolute and you're in this blissful...
Mm-hmm. You are the Absolute.
Eternal... Mm-hmm. Infinite mm-hmm. state, mm-hmm. and you sacrifice it to create a new world.
Yeah, why does the world exist?
Out of love, mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. So in a way, grace is also
It is
involved.
Great.
It's the same love that takes you to the Absolute that then is used to do the swaha and to manifest out of love a new mm-hmm. world, a mm-hmm. new...
Yes. And remember, every world starts in a Sat Yuga. It starts in a time of the kingdom of heaven. It's a paradise. Everything is beautiful. And those who come to inhabit it are avatars. You're still aware of God consciousness and living in it. And you can perform miraculous things. You have all the possible cities that a yogi could dream of. They are just natural attributes of your being. And your body is luminous. It is almost see-through. The fineness of the realm, it's not material yet. It's still a realm of light. It hasn't become dense, which egos perceive it as, and then it becomes like that. It's perceived in all of its celestial glory. And there is total joy in every moment. Every interaction is beautiful and is a manifestation of God's wisdom and goodness and power and beauty, all of it. So God in that perfection is on display, you see. So the sacrifice enables the souls who have earned the right to be in that heavenly realm to enjoy salvation, right? Everyone wants heaven, right? So heaven is given, but it's a sacrifice, because even heaven is a come down from the Absolute, but the Absolute creates that, you see. There's a part of the Absolute that will not come into the Sat Yuga, will not enjoy it, but will, from a distance, simply allow that creation. If you have graduated, then you won't come down into it, but there will be the unfoldment of it in accord with the, let's say, the essence of who you are. your divine energy will inhabit everyone, will pervade the whole unfoldment, right? With the choreographing of the trajectory of time itself. And so then it has to reach a point at which that happiness is lost, so that wisdom that is can be gained from the innocence of the avatar to the wisdom of the sage, and then to the ignorance of the ego, and then back into the light again. So there's a perfect wholeness of every permutation of consciousness, from the highest to the lowest, the lightest to the darkest, and then all of those are integrated. Because the darkest are necessary in the same way that the bacteria that decompose a dead body are necessary, so that the matter can return to its essential nature, elemental nature. And in the same way, we have to return to our original nature through destruction. But that destruction will not be perceived as destruction if you're in God consciousness now. So the same level of Sat Yuga needs to be gained in Sangam Yuga, which is that moment when the yogis awaken and come together and create that new world through the sacrifice of the ego.
So is that state what is referred to as rapture?
Mm-hmm. The rapture at the end, uh-huh. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lightning bolt can be considered the rapture also, right?
But it's not being in the absolute, or it's being taken.
It's being raised to that. So there's the bliss of realizing the ascent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kalyan.
Thinking about Swaha, it sounds very similar, it feels very similar to surrender, but it's on the other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And but yet, it's not just a surrender from an egoic space, it's more of a confirmation, it feels like.
It's God's surrender. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not like the ego surrendering to mm-hmm. God, it's God surrendering mm-hmm. God, it's realizing mm-hmm. that and mm-hmm. saying, yes. And yeah, it was more of a comment than a question, if that's accurate or not.
In the Kabbalistic tradition, they talk about that also, that God makes a space for the world to appear in, right? And so God creates that space and allows a world to appear so that those incompleted elements can reach fulfillment.
And I just wanted to share that the singing from Mantresh, there's a line that I just can't get out of my mind is Shiva, come into my heart, into my mind, to make us one. Mm-hmm. And it's that first, you know, that asking for grace. And
yes.
It's very beautiful and touching. So mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just wanted to share that.
And when you ask wholeheartedly, you'll get the bolt. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Kalyan. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Shunya. Just a simple question. Can lightning strike twice? Say, yes. For example, if someone might get hit, but their ego was too large to recognize the gift.
Yes, it can happen. And if you have good enough karma, then you'll get the second lightning bolt, and that one you'll make good use of. This is the story of Parsifal. The Arthurian legends are all about this. They're coded, but it's the same thing. So he was allowed to enter the Grail Castle, right? And to sit next to the Grail King while the Grail and the Grail attendants came and all of this. But the Grail King was wounded, right? It was a sexual wound. And he felt as a mere knight, I shouldn't talk to the king. King is right. So he followed the conventional rules, and he didn't ask the king, what ails you? Can I help you? And then he was kicked out, and he had to wander for years, right? And then finally was allowed back to complete his task.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, last question, Ashira.
Thank you for this beautiful teaching. And it's more common than a question as well on the Swaha. For me, this feels like you bringing this point in. I haven't really heard that before or contemplated on that, and it feels like closing the whole cycle of everything, because before there was this idea of getting somewhere, rising into something, mm-hmm. and through this Swaha, it feels that we are not going anywhere. We are just...
It's a merry-go-round.
it's this... it's just the impermanence of everything. It's creation playing this game. And Sat-Yuga is not better than Kali-Yuga. It is, of course, in one way, but in another way, it's not, because it's all...
The whole is perfect. Just, everything exactly. has to be contained.
Yes.
That's right.
And it's so beautiful, because it brings this whole another opening mm-hmm. to receive it in that mm-hmm. way. And mm-hmm.
So you see, you said it was completely closed, and it brings an opening. And that is true. It is both. The system of the universe is a closed system, but God is a totally open system of intelligence. And so there is also a level of God consciousness that transcends the world that will not come back and identify as any creature going through the merry-go-round process, but is liberated from it. And that level of intelligence creates many cosmoses, not just one, multiverse. Infinity of infinities, because the intelligence of that one is so inconceivably great that one cosmos is not enough to satisfy the creative intelligence of that being.
Wow. Well,
that's a good word to end on. God is great. Allahu Akbar. Namaste. There are announcements.